Yes, hello everyone and welcome to the Dribble Podcast. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper, and throughout this massive month of finals, I'm bringing you all the news and interviews for everything to do with basketball in WA. And what a week it has been. We had the Wildcats winning game one of their semi-final series over Tassie in Perth on Friday, and the Lynx were unbelievable in destroying Southside Flyers in game one of the grand final series on Sunday. And then we had the Wildcats losing to Tasmania on Monday to make it 1-1. So now we have a deciding game three between the Wildcats and Jack Jumpers at RAC Arena on Wednesday, while the Lynx will be entering Thursday night knowing they can win their first championship since 1992 and they can do it on their own floor. So today we'll have two guests. We'll have Danny Mills from the Wildcats and we will have Coach Ryan Petrick from the Perth Lynx. You look forward to hearing from both of those, and it is a frantic day for both of them. It is Tuesday, March 12 as we record. It's 11:28 a.m. in Perth, and the Wildcats are 35 minutes away from jumping on a plane in Melbourne after travelling there from Tasmania. Danny Mills is the Wildcats General Manager of Basketball, and he's got a short window of opportunity to chat. Danny, thanks for joining us.
Craig, how you doing?
Let's start with your manic day. It's chaotic. Your next flight is on the other side of the airport, so two flights and recovery as well. How's it all going for everyone?
Yeah, it is a quick turnaround, obviously, for both teams. Played game last night, back to the hotel, and then we had a film session this morning with the guys, and then on to two flights through Melbourne, back to Perth, and then obviously game three tomorrow.
So it's quite unique compared to what you normally do when you've got a short turnaround. Normally it's Friday and Sunday as your schedule. This is Monday to Wednesday, but you're flying in a different direction across the country, which means you pick up some time coming home. Does that give you a chance to even get on court tonight?
No. Obviously today's a travel rest day. So, but yeah, you're right. It is opposite in the sense that usually we have a Friday into a Sunday. So it is going opposite. We get home at a reasonable hour, which is good. The guys get enough rest and recovery as they can get, and both teams are in the same boat. We'll be ready for tomorrow night.
So Tassie, you're obviously travelling today as well. They'll land about 30 minutes before you. Have you crossed paths today at the airport? Like, it'd be a bit of a unique scenario, I would have thought, right now.
Yeah, no. I believe they were on the earlier flight out of Hobart. And we were on, just one just after them. So no, I haven't seen them. Like you said, they'll get in just a flight before us. And we're about to board in about 20 minutes ourselves.
So right now the series is locked at one apiece. Pressure is high and it will get even higher on Wednesday night. It feels to me like composure is going to be the difference between the two teams. Who can handle the pressure of the moment and the intense environment right now? Do you feel that's one of the absolute keys?
Yeah, for sure. I think composure in all of these high-stakes games is definitely crucial. The team can come out and control the pace of the game and play to their style is going to have a big advantage. So, getting off to a good start and getting what we hope is a really vocal, loud crowd behind us is going to be key. And that's the benefit and the reward of the guys from finishing in the top two spot. You get a game three if it comes to that in a home arena. And so, the hope is that's to our advantage, and we'll see how it plays out going on.
So it's been a high foul series so far. There were 48 in game one, including 19 in the first quarter, and by halftime, 9 guys were on at least 2 fouls across the two teams. 46 fouls in game two. Kiana Pinto fouls out after only 13 minutes. Doolittle and Wagstaff had 4 each. So it feels like the fouling side of things is going to be crucial to try to control it for both teams, because this is how the series is being reffed. Have you reflected on that at the moment about whether you can change some parts of your game or whether you just have to play through it?
Yeah, I think you just got to adjust to how the game's being called. Like you said, kind of both games were polar opposites. And, last night we had quite a few of our front court guys get into some real foul trouble, and you have to start to manage those guys' minutes to make sure they don't pick up any more, especially in the first half. And it's harder to get the actual team into rhythm when you're trying to mix and match combinations of players, given that some of them you don't want to risk until the second half if they're in foul trouble. So, it's difficult, but I don't think that's anything different from what we've seen during the season. It's just that, we've played, two games in a three-game series against the same opponents. So definitely that'll be crucial. The start of in the first quarter is controlling the tempo and making sure that we're the ones that are hopefully putting pressure on the rim and being able to draw fouls ourselves.
Do you find yourself in a position when it is do or die in a game like this, where you can risk blokes a bit more if they do get into foul trouble and say, well, we just need them on court, or is it too dangerous because they'll be targeted?
I think it comes down to the feel of the game and how you feel it's being called from the get-go. And, you know, obviously John has a great feel for that, and his staff do, and they'll manage that accordingly, however it plays out in the first half. But, yeah, like you said, it's a do-or-die game. It's a high stakes of the game to be. It's win or go home. So, like, you're obviously going to, you know, put everything out there, and, you know, once the game's into the second half and comes a bit tighter, then obviously you're going to put your best five players out on the floor, no matter the situation.
So the crowd will have a huge effect in this game. It did the other night, it did in both games, actually. So it's a Wednesday night in Perth with not much notice, so it can be tough for fans in these circumstances. This is a time when you really need your Red Army, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that's the incredible home court advantage we feel like we've had. We have an amazing fan base, and they've always come out and shown that. We had an awesome crowd on Friday at home, and we're hoping and expecting the same tomorrow night. Like you said, it's short notice, but it's also playoff basketball, and, you know, we've known the dates for a while now, so we're super excited. Super excited to get home and play in front of our home crowd, because, yeah, last night, obviously, as many of you know, they've got a smaller arena, but it's packed and they're loud, and it was a pretty cool environment. But for us, you know, hopefully this is, you know, to our advantage on playing in front of our own fans.
And experience now looks like it's going to be really important. At one point in the game last night, the five players on the floor were Jesse Wagstaff, Bryce Cotton, Corey Webster, Christian Doolittle and Ty Webster, who have got more than 20 championships combined professionally, both here and overseas. Like, when you have those sorts of blokes around who you can draw upon, how important have they been so far?
Yeah, it's crucial, right? You need guys that are on the court in those big moments that have been there before. And it does give you an advantage. It gives you a comfort level. These guys have been there, done that. They've played on the biggest stages, and they've come out successful. So for us, we do have a lot of experience, championship experience, both here in the NBL and overseas in college. So, yeah, we'll draw on that as much as we can. And, you know, then it's up to the players to make a good place.
And at the other end of the experience level, you've got Alex Saar, who is just blocking everything that comes his way. You must be thrilled to see how he has managed to take his game to another level under the bright lights of finals.
Yeah, look, Alex has just been great all season. And, you know, for him, this is a huge step. This is a different level of physicality that we've all seen. And I'm sure he's felt. And, you know, he's playing the high-stakes game tomorrow. Huge. You know, there's obviously a championship series on the line, and I think this has been the goal of the team since day one, and every year he's on the team will be locked in. And so for Alex, you know, for us to have him out there using his length, his agility, and his ability to change and also shots at the rim and come up with rebounds, that's something we're expecting from him in a big game three.
So where's your edge? Why do you think you win this one? Where is it going to be won and lost from your perspective?
Yeah, look, I think for both teams, I think it's been a series of which role players have stepped up, you know. Like, I think in game one, we had a lot of contributors across the board, and that gave us an advantage. And then I think yesterday, I think Tasmania had some guys really step up and play really well in their certain roles. So, you know, for us, I think it's about more contributions across the board and having a number of guys play their roles, but also, you know, step up and make shots. And I think that's going to be the difference in this, and obviously deciding game three.
You're incredibly well matched, aren't you? You win the first one by 8, they win the second one by 8. Your most recent clash before that one in Tassie, when you rested half your team during the game, was 1 point. And then in the opening game of the season, when everyone was figuring it out, was close as well. So you're incredibly well matched, aren't you?
It is. No. Tassie's an incredibly well-coached team. They're disciplined. They're not going to beat themselves. You're going to have to go out and beat them, that's for sure. They've proven that in the last 3 years, and especially this season. You know, they've got a very good roster. Like I said, they're well coached. Scott's very experienced. And so for us, yeah, we're going to have to go out there and really perform to our best. But no doubt we can. And one of the guys and the coaches are really ready for this game three.
Well, look, thanks for joining us. I know you've got to get through security, you've got to get onto the plane, you've got to board, and you've got to get back home. So thanks very much for your time. Good luck tomorrow night. Get your tickets, Wildcats fans, 6:30 p.m. at RAC Arena for Wednesday to see your team hopefully win through to a grand final. Danny Mills, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Craig. Appreciate your support.
Well, Perth Lynx had a day out on Sunday and absolutely demolished Southside Flyers with a 101-79 win in Victoria to take a 1-0 lead in the grand final series. Their coach, Ryan Petrick, has just stepped off court after completing training. Ryan, welcome back to the Dribble Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So how was the session? How was film? How is everybody?
Yeah, everyone's really good. We're fine. Film, yeah, was been an hour and a half in film today in total. Probably maybe an hour on court max. This time of year, it's much more about getting off their feet and trying to rest them up as much as they possibly can, whilst fixing as many X and O's as we can, slash reinforcing all the things we like that we did in game one.
So you've had extra time throughout this final series, which you certainly didn't have during the year. You're winning the semis in two games, gave you the benefit of some extra training sessions last week. This time also, you managed to get back on the night of the game, which has given you an extra day as well, instead of having to travel. So how important has that been in terms of your preparations?
Oh, enormous. Especially for our style of play. Like, we are so up and down. We would burn more calories than anyone else with our play style. Like, it really hurts, as every opposition team tells us after we've played them. So getting extra rest really helps. And as we keep saying to the girls, the reality here is Thursday night is our second game in 12 days or whatever it is, 11 days, something, 10 days, sorry. Whatever the crazy number is, where it's Southside's third game in 8 days. So again, continue to run.
So the courage to run and just to suck it up and know you're in pain, but your opponent is in more pain because, as you said, they've had a more fatiguing schedule. How much are you stressing to them that if you're hurting, remember the other person's hurting more?
Yeah, well, as we kind of alluded to post game, it's been the MO since pre season. We looked at those big four teams and the rosters they were building, and all the Opals and WNBA players and all that kind of stuff they had on their rosters. But it's like, okay, we've got to design a way to beat these guys. So we're not just going to roll over and finish seventh. We've got to find a way to try and beat them. And the one thing we thought we could do is we could outrun them at least. And that's been the plan from day dot. Like, if we've had to play Townsville in a half-court grind, or Southside, or Melbourne, or Sydney in a half-court grind, with all that talent they've got, we're probably going to be in some trouble. But we've just gone and built ourselves a team full of athletes that can run and gun and shoot and not really care about the consequences of it, just let it fly. And it's been huge, obviously, so far for us this season.
So being such a wildly attacking team that loves shooting threes, when you make 22 of them in a grand final, did you think they were possible? They were capable of doing that when you put this group together?
You have to say yes. You know, it sounds arrogant, but if you don't think they're capable of doing it, then why are you building that game plan? So you have to have some belief in the team that's going to do it. Now, again, do you think you're going to 22 of 38? That's probably slightly overs. But we generally thought they could be a 40% roughly 3-point team for the season, because of how good Erin McDonald is in terms of getting players the shots on time on target and how often she can get that first domino to fall on defense. And now you'll see that, like, a lot of the threes we hit, okay, we hit 22 and we absolutely hit four or five stupid ones. There's no argument about that. But that still leaves 16 or 17 threes that were like just wide, wide, wide open. And a lot of those are from Erin McDonald, who is throwing the ball to people on time, on target, in rhythm, and they're just walking into training shots. So, yeah, not surprised we're showing that well, but not surprised that the styles worked.
The danger of having such a game like that where Amy Atwell is laughing because she doesn't realise she makes a three-pointer when she gets fouled, and Steph Gorman banks one off the top corner of the backboard. Like, you can go into games thinking, oh, this will happen again, we'll be all good, and people can overshoot. Have you addressed that at all, or are you trying to keep their minds clear and saying, just keep shooting?
Just keep shooting. And then probably the step before that, just keep running. So it wasn't necessarily by design that we wanted to fly down the floor and just launch threes. We want to fly down the floor and take the best shot that's available. And again, we have a flow chart we don't get into with the kind of shots we want. It's not, threes aren't the first look we're chasing, but they're certainly high on that pecking order. It just happened to be that the south side were giving it to us. So that was the shot they kept presenting itself. That was the shot we were going to keep taking.
So the score 101 v Southside, 108 v Townsville. Your last two games of the regular season were 93 against Bendigo and 94 against Canberra. So you're going to try to shoot the lights out. Do you believe that if you have a high scoring game, that there's not going to be many teams out there that can beat you, and probably Southside can't beat you as well if you score 100 again?
Yeah, well, it's not so much about shooting the lights out as much as we want to have a game where there's a lot of possessions and there's a lot of up and down, because we also think that hurts the opposition's offense. So, again, there are possessions from the south side where, and even Townsville's a better example. There was a clip from Townsville we used again and again and again from game two, where Steph Reid flew down the floor and threw a home run past Alice Kunick, which turned into a turnover. Potter got it, threw it to McDonald. 4 seconds later, McDonald gets a wide open three in transition, timeout Townsville. The style of play from us forces other teams to play our way. And we've been training for this for 6-7 months, whatever it is, whereas other teams are trying to do it on the fly. that's probably the bigger part for our side of things. We're trying to force teams to play our style.
Take us through the transformation of Amy Atwell this season and how good she's been.
Yeah, she's been phenomenal. Obviously, last year was a fringe starter. She started more games than she didn't, but she obviously had a lull there for a while. We brought her off the bench. And again, obviously playing behind Whitcomb, playing alongside Sharp, she was always the second or third choice in the three-point line, with Bibby as well in the three-point line. Like, she was always our second or third guard. And then once Bibby started making shots as well, we didn't run too much for her last year. Whereas obviously Sharpie and Whitcomb moving on. And we were always really keen on Amy. It's just, obviously last year with Whitcomb, we had to play through Whitcomb first. This year, roster opportunity opened up. We really wanted to keep banking on this kid because, again, West Aussie homegrown kid. She's going to come good. She's only had one season in the system. Had a decent start to the year, then really started to accelerate and take off a little bit. And then when Airy went down, it became obvious. We just had to build our offensive game plan around her a hell of a lot more. And then once we did that, she just continued to get better and better and better and better. And now she's getting more and more and more defensive attention. And now McDonald's come back. Now she's getting the second best guard, trying to guard her. And if you focus too much on Atwell, then Airy gets going and vice versa. You can now run actions for her where she's a decoy. Even some of the wide open threes we got the other night, it was her man that should have rotated to the open shooter, but they just don't want to leave her. So we can run all kinds of actions for her. And then offensively, I don't think we've ever had someone make shots like she has. Whitcomb was obviously off the charts. I've always said Marina Mabry was the best I've ever seen in my time with the Lynx. But Amy Atwell is challenging that right now big time. Like, she might go to number one if we can get out of this series. The shots Marina Mabry made were crazy, but Amy Atwell is at that level right now.
So we know she's obviously focusing on this at the moment. She's got a WNBA opportunity after this as well. She's risen to a massive level. Do you see her now as being at that level again?
Well, we always thought she would be at some point. It was just a matter of her figuring some things out and cleaning up some areas of the game that she needed to clean up. I mean, I remember being in a car with Jackie and Marina on one of our road trips that year, and they were already talking about Amy Atwell before she was even a first Lynx player, and how good she was and how good a shooter she was. Like, they knew who she was 2 or 3 years ago. So we've always thought she's a future WNBA player. Obviously, she got there maybe a little bit earlier than people expected, but we've always expected her to finish up in the WNBA for sure.
Emily Potter's been really important for you this final series, 33 rebounds across the three games, and just providing you with the physical presence, not fouling, and just being there for you.
Yeah, and playing the role wonderfully. So, obviously, matchups is part of it, and not asking you to do things outside her skill set. Her ability to set on balls and get out of there ASAP has been so much better this whole final series. She was sitting on the screens and then just lingering forever in actions. Whereas now she's setting on getting the heck out of there ASAP and taking her man with her. And then defensively, like, she's playing in that Scherf, Kayla Steindl role right now, being the super helper. In the Townsville series, it was Atina Kuso, where we just weren't going to guard her on the three-point line. She's able to just gunk up possessions. And obviously in game one, we used her against Russell and did the same kind of thing. Just, you're not leaving the keyway, you're just going to gunk it up as much as you can. And that's forcing teams to shoot mid-range jump shots and threes that are contested and let their guards be more aggressive. And again, it keeps her out of foul trouble because, as you've seen, if we can keep her on the floor, it's really, really hard to get past.
And we've talked so much about your big names all year, but you've got 58 points in this final series from Alex Cipitone, Miller Goodchild and Steph Gorman, who are your money ball players. They're the ones who others may not have considered even going to, and they've been so important for you. This is part of your strategy to go and get players other people might not necessarily rate as highly and give them key roles. You must be thrilled that they've shown what they can do.
Oh, absolutely. Ecstatic for those three in particular. Even we've had opposition coaches say the same thing. Like, we would have said not have even considered those players. But you guys saw us playing in them that everyone else missed. And now they're killing it for you. So really, really pleased for them because they are. They're all three of them are really, really good basketball players that just need to be in the right system, in the right environment. And obviously, we think they are here in Perth. So, ecstatic for those three.
You've been in this situation before. How often have you thought about 2 years ago when you dominated that game one over there in Melbourne and then just couldn't get it done here in the second one and then got away from you in the third?
Only when you guys bring it up. So, I try not to think about it too often. But yeah, obviously, it's a question we get peppered with left, right and centre. The beauty for us, I guess, is that it's only a battle scar for myself, for Brad, for Nat, Hoycard was a DP, Chibatoni. So the reality, like, Aries got no idea what you're talking about. Neither does Atwell, neither does Annalie, neither does Emily. Yada, yada, yada. Well, most of her team's got no idea. They've heard about it, I guess, but haven't actually been through it. And even then, when you watch that game two back, it wasn't so much a bunch of X and O issues. It was more, we just didn't play with the same kind of intensity or aggression. We talked all the time about that play, end of the second quarter, where Marina shot early, Allen got the ball, dribbled around all five of them for a wide open three. We just stopped playing. Makes it Melbourne are on from there on. We've got to play harder in game two. We've got to match their aggression for sure. That was the biggest thing we got wrong last time.
So do you show them that? That's my memory of the game as well, that the Lindsay Allen three, in fact, it was pretty much the end of every quarter. And it felt like they finished the quarters better. In the last couple of seconds, they got buckets. So while we all remember Marina maybe missing the free throw, that wouldn't have even been necessary if you had have guarded players better at the end of every single quarter. Can you use that as a reminder, given that the Townsville mistakes you had a couple of times late in the quarters during the semi-final series as well, that if you finish up the quarters better, you put yourself in a massively better position?
It's funny you mentioned the Melbourne halftime play. I actually showed that to Nat this morning. I was like, do I show the girls this or not? And I guess the consensus then was like, we're not going to bring up battle scars to a bunch of players that don't remember. So he didn't. But that was the one that always got me. Like, everyone talked about the Marina miss free throw. It was the play right before halftime where all five of our girls just stopped playing. And Melbourne kept playing, sort of playing for their life and hit it. And it gave them belief and it gave them momentum. Finished quarters out and got to try and knock them out. Same thing happened in Townsville earlier this year. We hold Whitcomb pretty quiet in that first quarter of that game without McDonald. And then she hits a three from half court when we stop playing. And all of a sudden she's going and now she's a pain in the backside the rest of the night. So finishing out quarters is clearly really important for us.
There is a big picture here. You've been part of this club for a long, long time. You've built relationships with a lot of the former players and got them involved with where you could. They are really passionate about this club, and it means a lot to them to see this team there. You would well and truly understand how much it means to a lot of people to see you in this position.
Yeah, I get it. And I, in all honesty, it's something I've tried not to think about too much because it takes your mind away from the job at hand. And once you start thinking of what if, what if, what if, you actually miss out on the opportunity that's currently sitting in front of us. So we've tried to get the week as normal as much as possible. Like we still have a job to do. We have to beat Southside. And clearly, if we're good enough to get that done in game two or three or whenever it is, then great. Like clearly there's a lot of people that have gone through a lot of pain the last, 32 years? Is that right?
That's right. That's correct.
It's been a long time. And we've had training on that court virtually every day for 9 years. And there's one banner on the wall. It's super depressing, and it's something I've had an opportunity now, this is my fourth year, to try and fix and haven't been able to fix it yet. So if we are good enough to get it done, great. But again, without sounding lame, I know it's not what anyone's here, but we still have a job we've got to get done.
Tanya Fisher actually sent me a photo of the peanut tray they got for winning in 1992. I couldn't believe what it actually looked like. It does have champions on there, but it's a bizarre memento for people to get from 1992. So it would be nice for your girls to win and get some rings and add another banner to the grandstand, and everyone would be very, very happy with that for sure. The expectation is the big thing now. You're playing at home. How do you handle it, the talk that's going to be around it for them and going into a game in a really unique position where they know what's on the line and that everyone there is going to see them and hope that they can get it for them?
As much as we can, we're just going to keep playing the same way. And that's the concern here is if we start tightening up and slowing down, that plays straight in the south side's hands. So we've got to be brave to try and win it. Not to try and protect it. Our style is built to play fast and play reckless and play carefree. And every now and then, shots aren't going to go in. Like, we're not going to, maybe we don't shoot it 60% from three again like we did the other night. That's fine, but we've got to keep running. We've got to get Southside out of there. Clearly, the crowd's going to be at another level and they'll be super excited and blah, blah, blah. We've got to try and drown all of that out as much as we possibly can. And then hopefully, if we're good enough to win, we can enjoy it with them after. But those 40 minutes, this is a series for a reason. We've got to find a way to knock these guys out.
Well, it is 6:30 p.m. on Thursday night. Massive night for the Perth Lynx. Massive night for Ryan Petrick and his team. Hopefully it goes really, really well for you. Perth is behind you. And we're all hoping that at the end of the night, you've put another triple-figure score and you'll be holding up that championship trophy. So good luck.
Appreciate it always. Thank you.
So that's it for this week's episode of the Dribble Podcast. Thanks to Danny Mills and Ryan Petrick for their time. Thanks to Josh Cable and Alex Smith for their production work. You can read all of your basketball news in the West Australian and at thewest.com.au. Massive week for basketball in this state. Good luck to both teams. Thanks for listening to the Dribble Podcast.